T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
He was a doctor during the Civil War and then carried around a skeleton of someone with him for the rest of his life and was also responsible for founding one of the most significant restaurants in all of Kansas City. It's the fascinating life of Kansas City Civil War doctor, Dr. Joshua Thorne. So every month we do this, you know, podcast, Diane, I get excited because I know I'm always going to learn something new, something fantastic, and something phenomenal. And I'm sure a lot of people in Kansas City have heard of the Savoy Grill. I've never been lucky enough to go to the Savoy Grill, but what we're all lucky enough to have today is kind of the history of maybe kind of how it began, and some doctor came riding in on his horse and had the land for the Savoy Grill. Who is Dr. Joshua Thorne?
He stirred some stuff up in KC in a very contentious time of our history. Dr. Thorne was our Civil War doctor, which is pretty cool. And then he happened to buy land and lived on it for many, many, many years, which is then, of course, the future of the Savoy Hotel and Savoy Grill. But most people don't know that. Even the people that talk about the history of the Savoy and the hotel, they somehow miss this great, amazing doctor who is, you know, took the right side of history and was a part of the Union, no less.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I was, you know, looking up some other stuff about the Savoy Grill because, you know, sometimes you get down those rabbit holes and, you know, Wikipedia is what it is. And I looked at the Wikipedia page and I'm going
wrong.
I'm looking for Mr. Thornton Mellon, Dr. Mellon, Dr. Thorne, and there's nothing mentioned about it. I'm like, man, Diane's got this thing going on pretty good because she's getting ready to tell us about this doctor who maybe a lot of people don't even know existed and really, quite frankly, did a lot here in Kansas City.
He did. And it's the rabbit hole that led me to Dr. Thorne, to be clear, because I kept seeing him in these papers. You know, I just got finished with my second master's in history. And when I was writing my thesis about William Gillis, I kept running across this Dr. Thorne who was like snitching on people during the Civil War. And I was like, who is this dude? And so then I looked him up and then, you know, kind of William Gillis kind of fits into a little bit of his story. And I thought, how is nobody ever talking about this guy? And I, of course, look back in newspapers and I see every reference to him, you know, in the recent past, if you will, say from the 50s, 60s, 70s. And it's like a sentence and nobody connects it to the Savoy. And so I thought, well, I have to, I of course made sure I'm 100% right. And I think even Savoy has their dates wrong on some stuff. So Joshua Thorne was our Civil War doctor who came to the area. He was from England. So I love it because they can, you know, now he's got a British accent, so he's even cooler. And he was born in 1832. And he arrives in the United States with his family in 1845, ends up in Baltimore, does some, you know, early schooling there, studies at Denison University in Ohio. And then he kind of, I'm kind of surprised he landed in Kansas City out of all the places, because Kansas City was a little rough, you know, during the 1850s. And when he was studying, he kept moving. And so I thought, well, you know, he's, you know, one minute he's in Ohio, then he's in St. Louis studying medicine. Then he's in Charleston, South Carolina, studying medicine. And then he does postgraduate work in Philadelphia. I'm like, what the hell? Like, the guy's just everywhere. And so, and he gets into homeopathy, which is a really interesting, like, early quack doctor kind of stuff.
So he was like the original medicine man, like the guy in the Wizard of Oz driving around selling elixirs and things like that. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But wasn't that kind of the case back then, though? Like, nobody knew anything really back then about medicine.
It's, well, let's be clear. It's like you need your leg amputated. It's like, yeah, you got him drunk.
So, right.
I mean, like your options are limited.
Well, but I think people should know that are listening, if they don't already know, like the bite the bullet term that people say, just bite the bullet. Like people legitimately in the Civil War
were biting down on bullets
mm-hmm. when they were having their legs chopped off. And I remember as a kid going to Civil War battlefields. I mean, that's kind of what we did. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to look at Gettysburg today. And you'd find all these old Civil War bullets, and a lot of them looked like they had been bit on. And they were, because people mm-hmm. were biting on these things during the Civil War when they were having their surgeries and procedures done.
It is, yes. And homeopathy was this like kind of crazy alternative medicine that came up in like the early 1800s. And like, of course, now we know that, you know, medicine has told us that medicine was wrong. I know that's a big shocker in society, but it waned in the late 1800s. But they know now it had absolutely zero effect on diseases. Like they were not even close, but it was all alternative medicine. Like treat your body with the opposite of what it needs. Like just crazy stuff. I'm not really great at the sciences. So I looked into it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of crazy. You know, this is a little nuts, but he wasn't just, you know, Dr. Thorne wasn't just into that kind of stuff. He was one of those people that just like was completely open to all knowledge. So it was like he studied all the religions. You know, he was kind of into Buddhism and all this stuff. And then he became a spiritualist with the rest of Kansas City. So then he's like trying to conjure up the ghosts. I mean, so I think this guy's kind of cool. You know, he's not just your normal doctor. But yeah, so homeopathy, it, of course, I'd like to point out too, it totally, you know, dies out in the late 1800s and then had a resurgence in the 70s. I'm like, of course it resurged in the 70s. I mean, like, why not? But anyway, so he ends up, you know, being reared and educated for the most part in the South. In 1859, he gets married to a gal in Springfield, Illinois, like he ended up there for a while. And then he comes to Kansas City in 1859, like the worst possible time to come to Kansas City was 1859. Like just the height of the border wars. You've got the anti-slavery, the pro-slavery settlers. For the most part, Kansas City is completely pro-slavery. It's run by pro-slavery people. And he's like, I'm going to set up shop here. This looks like a great idea. But you know, we needed a doctor too. There weren't that many doctors at the time. And so he really was encouraging medicine and spirituality and all of these things. So he sets up, you know, shop, and then the Civil War breaks out in 1861. So it's like, bam, that's it. So he ends up helping raise Robert T. Van Horn's battalion, which is like Kansas City's home guard of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. He ends up being a part of the battalion. Of course, he's their doctor. And this is all in 1861. We needed a home guard because we still had bushwhackers and everything else running around. And Kansas City, even though a lot of the people that lived in Kansas City at the time had, were enslaved people and were slaveholders, they still were trying to stay neutral. You know, back when they were like, we're unionists, but only to a certain degree. Like this is the reason that Missouri never seceded, kind of thing. It's like, mm-hmm. we're still slavery, but we're not going to go with this. And they tried to stay neutral, and it worked for a little bit, but it didn't work for very long. So he actually was ordered by the Surgeon General of the United States to raise a general hospital in Kansas City for in case anything, you know, for the battles that would occur in the area. So he takes over the McGee's Hotel, which was also known as the Southern Hotel, the Planters Hotel, and the McGee's, and they're friends of mine in Kansas City. So I'm saying this probably with the blessing of their own, you know, kin folk. The McGee's were crazy people back then. So they were pro-slavery, super violent, definitely not on the right side of history, but they were able to stay in Kansas City during the Civil War because they were doing favors like this, like, oh, here, take our hotel, use it as a hospital, just don't kick us out, you know? This is like at 12th and Main, like this is the hospital, and it's out kind of in the middle of nowhere. McGee's addition was outside of the Kansas City city limits at the time. And so it was actually near Grand Avenue. So he is running this hospital. And of course, unlike where you grew up, Bob, Kansas City, the vicinity had a lot of little skirmishes, but there wasn't like really a major battle or anything until much later in the war. And so I don't know, you know, besides traveling around with the battalion and stuff like that and taking care of soldiers, who knows how much work Dr. Thorne was actually doing, but he was living at the hotel/hospital at the time. Confederates never actually entered the city, but we had an American troop group, we had an Irish troop group, and we had a German troop group, because, you know, they all were kind of separate. And those were our Unionists at the time, for the most part, were Irish and Germans. So what's kind of interesting is he did tell on a lot of people during the Civil War. So he was writing a lot of letters to the commanders saying, I know who's guilty of disloyal actions in Kansas City, and here are all their names.
So this guy was a tattletale then. Yes. You know, what they say, snitches get stitches. And
for real.
And this type of stuff, especially during the Civil War, this dude's out here ratting people out. I'm surprised he didn't get killed.
Me too. And that's what's so amazing about it.
Like, especially back then, where there was like 2,400 people living in Kansas City. If somebody ratted on you, you knew exactly where to find them. You went down there, took care of business.
You don't want to get rid of the one dude who might be able to save you, though, too.
Well, there is that. Yeah.
But in January of 1863, he literally said, I swear, and he listed off 78 Kansas Cityans. And I want to
That's
be
like
clear.
Half the population.
Exactly. Kansas City at the time lost a lot of its population during the Civil War. So we're talking about like a pretty good chunk of people. And the names are familiar. William S. Gregory Boulevard, mm-hmm. first mayor of Kansas City. William Gillis, my dude, Mrs. Benoist Troost Avenue, ABH McGee made the list. Too bad his brother gave the hotel up and he still made the list. Mm-hmm. John McCoy, founder of Kansas City and Westport, 78 people total on the list. So again, I can't believe he got away with it either, but that, I mean, it is what it is. That's what happened. So he also, you know, armies always had a chaplain. This is a great story. And he was in charge of, you know, making sure everybody was healthy. And he later told a story where he said that they were never very lucky at getting a good chaplain. And he said, they all turned out bad. Our first one drank a bunch of whiskey. Our second one ran away with a woman. And our third one was a thief. And he tells this story about how, you know, the home guard would have been just sitting around most of the time, just guarding the city. This is not like they're in major battles. Like
right.
We're talking about up north, like Gettysburg. So at 12th and Main, I love this. There was a grove at 12th and Main, and it was really hot outside, summertime. And somebody goes running up to him and says, our chaplain is having a sunstroke. Like, he's not doing well. And so of course he jumps in their ambulance, which this would have been, of course, their cart, with an Irishman on the back. And they go running to the side of this, you know, of this sick chaplain. And the Irishman gets to him first, and he's holding this chaplain in his lap. And this Irishman looks up at the doctor as he's running to save this man's life and says, faith, doctor, and I only wish I had half of this man's disease. He's drunk. It was really serious stuff back then, you know?
Yeah, that they were suffering from too much, you know, whiskey at the time.
Bored.
Of, you know,
they were bored.
Boredom and, you know, a lot of other things that possibly mm-hmm. were going on, just waiting for this, you know, just waiting for this war. But you said when we started this thing, like how he ended up here or accidentally or whatever the case may be, but everything happens for a reason. And this guy obviously became the Civil War doctor and did all this stuff. But he also went on to work for the federal government and probably one of these people that we should hate in America today.
True.
Because he was like the original founder of the IRS. And, you know, a guy who basically formed took a job forming a department to help pay for the war turned out to be the Department of the Government and really the thing everybody and everybody in America hates. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on, mm-hmm. this guy here was the reason why we got to pay taxes.
Yeah, I mean, and the way the government even did things didn't make a lot of sense. Well, I mean, do they now? But, you know, they closed the hospital in Kansas City right before the Battle of Westport. So it's like, well, whatever. You know, like, we don't have any more money to give you. He ends up being appointed.
Being fair on that, though, they didn't know the Battle of Westport was going to happen.
Of course not.
Right?
Of course not.
And maybe the Battle of Westport happens because they did get rid of the hospital. They go, oh, what are we going to do? We can't save anybody. Let's just blow it up, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it was lucky, though, too, that a lot of people stepped in and houses of both Union and Confederates were used to house the injured. And he did go around and obviously do his job during that. During the Battle of Westport, and that's October of 1864. But, you know, yeah, the hospital closed, but, you know, he's a doctor. And so his whole job or his whole idea is obviously to help whoever he can. And in 1870, he becomes kind of a delegate to the railroad convention. So I guess it doesn't even matter, you know, that he was on the right side of history, but Kansas City, I mean, at that point it was like bygones be bygones. But he was appointed by Lincoln as an assessor for the IRS. I mean, the early IRS. Mm-hmm. But he was removed a couple years later because Johnson became president. So he, you know, in this, Thorne was one of the very few Republicans in Kansas City. And in April 1869, he was appointed again by Grant. And the office ends up being abolished in 1873, not like the IRS got abolished, but they just changed the rules around. But something else that was really cool is that he did is when he was doing this work, he raided an old still house near Parkville. And they found four stills. He was friends with Wild Bill Hickok.
That's awesome.
Like, of course, yeah, like an old Wild West figure that, yeah, you know, everybody's heard of. Or if they're listening to this podcast, chances are they've heard of him. And Hickok used Dr. Thorne as his personal physician. And, I mean, Wild Bill Hickok was a frequent visitor to his house. And I mean, to Dr. Thorne's house, which mm-hmm. is where the Savoy is now, basically. And he even, in one of the memoirs somewhere along, like some, and it could be a tall tale, but they say that Wild Bill was shot up with 11 different bullets and during the Rock Creek fight, and Thorne removed them all. I don't know, you know, we'll just say maybe.
You like those stories. Why let facts 11, get in the way of something yeah. that's, you know, a really good, you know, tall tale, right? It's yeah. a great story. Riddled with 11 bullets and he was taken care of. Sure, fine, whatever.
And then, because he's kind of one of those doctors that's willing to just kind of go into whatever, you know, mm-hmm. one of the other things that he did, which was just nuts, and this is how I got, you know, William Gillis, again, I saw his name a couple times. In June of 1873, he was preparing to leave for a trip to Europe, so going back home, and he's in Kansas City in his buggy, and he gets stopped by, like, a reporter, and he's got...
Hang on a second. A trip to Europe in 1873 yeah. from Kansas City. So mm-hmm. what does that entail? Horse and buggy to New York and then hopping? Like, is that a year-long deal? Or like,
we got the railroad.
Got the railroad back then?
We got a railroad. 1869, we got the Hannibal Bridge. So you could get to Chicago, and then you could take Chicago over. There were a lot of different routes.
But it's not a quick trip it is today.
No,
where you can board
a
flight in Kansas City and be in Europe in 6 hours later, you know?
Yeah, no. This is not going to be like that at all. You absolutely, you could have gone through St. Louis too, up to Chicago. I mean, there's like, you know how it is. It's right. like, it's like getting to Europe today. You're going to have more than one route. You know, which way are you going to go? JFK? Mm-hmm. Dulles,
right.
you know, Atlanta. I wouldn't have not been quick, and nobody went over for 2 weeks or a month. You went over for 6 months, you know, and a lot of times it was for health reasons. And that was why a lot of people traveled south too. But Europe usually would have been, you know, for business purposes / obviously maybe to visit family for him. So he's got this box on his, you know, on his lap, and this reporter comes up, and of course, like, what do you got in there? You know, so like, what is in there? And he takes the cover off, and inside is an entire skeleton, like full skeleton. And
not a plastic one that you have in your classroom like, for Halloween, like a legit like real human one. Skeleton. Yeah.
Yep. And so what happened is he said, and again, take it for what it is. He said, "You see before you everything that remains of the celebrated Indian chief who was once known to all over the country as the Prophet." And the Prophet, as a little background, was born in 1775. He was the Shawnee Prophet, the brother of no other than Tecumseh. Mm-hmm. So, and he ends up coming to Wyandotte County area, Argentine neighborhood, and died there. And they, you know, time-wise, they lost track of his grave. So the story went that Dr. Thorne really wanted to dig him up because that's normal. And so he asked William Gillis, who was at this guy, the Prophet's funeral, like, show me where his body's at. And Gillis is like, okay.
Sure.
So he takes him there and supposedly dug him up. I mean, this is, again, take it for what it is. Dug him up and then reassembled it and like wired his skeleton back together.
Anybody a little creeped out about that though, that this guy's traveling around with a wired up skeleton of a dead guy?
Yeah. And a Native American, I mean, the Prophet, you don't think he would like haunt you for the rest of your life? Like, this is just a bad idea. Again, who knows if that's true, because then you know, they say they located it and dug it up, and that he was going to show it to the Kansas City College of Physicians, which he had served on the board of. But I have no other record of what happened after that with the said skeleton. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that, you know, they think they know about where the, you know, he was buried. Charles Blue Jacket came back to Kansas City in the 1890s when he was super old, like right before he died, and pointed out where he thought it was with the Historical Society, and they marked where they thought it was. So it was like that whole story Dr. Thorne told was like forgotten, and then they were looking for his body again. So there is like a marker near where it was supposedly, mm-hmm. but again, nobody's ever actually located it unless Thorne really did dig it up. Who knows? So he comes back. He comes back from Europe and he is 74 at this time, you know, or he returned in 1874.
Right.
And comes and he starts his general practice. And he's, like I said, he's deeply studied religions, you know, and people talked about how clear and logical his mind was. And he was just the nicest guy in the whole world. He ends up being, you know, in general, he sticks with the Republican Party. He was even a delegate for a while. He celebrated Lincoln's birthday every year. So when he becomes a spiritualist and he gets into the spiritualism, and he decides about this time in the 1880s, he becomes part of the board of examining surgeons in Kansas City, which is really cool because he ends up being the one who would examine Civil War vets and get them their pensions, their services that they needed. So he was like the early guy for that. And they ended up, he had examined about 2,000 soldiers in the Kansas City metro area when they abolished that office. And of course it got taken over by another office. But it was, I mean, that's pretty cool that, you know, not only did he service them in the war, but then afterwards he was actually helping them get their pensions. Mm-hmm. So he ends up being the oldest practicing physician in the 1880s. And then it becomes where he is, you know, the city is blown up and he's got his old house, which would be at 221 West 9th Street. And it's like,
if you look at the artist renderings of this stuff, you're thinking like, okay, it's in the middle of the city, but yet there's nothing mm-hmm. around it. It's almost like out in the middle of nowhere at the time, you know, even downtown in the heart of the city, there wasn't a lot going on down there.
And by the 1880s, Kansas City had really grown and it was becoming, your buildings were going up. And mm-hmm. I mean, they're starting to build taller buildings than ever before. So it's definitely his suburban residence on 9th Street.
On 9th Street,
They said it was once considered an elegant suburban residence. And it was a two-story frame home. He knew that first of all, you're looking at land values. He knew it was a good idea to go ahead and invest in something else. So his house was marked by an old cottonwood tree in the city. You know, everybody was sad to see that go. And they started grading the land and he decided to, which is kind of incredible. He decided to build a hotel there on the site of where he lived. And so they graded the land and then they built this hotel. And it became, and when I say this, he built the hotel, he lived in the hotel, and he leased the hotel to somebody who actually knew how to run a hotel. So the hotel opens in 1890 as Hotel Thorne, and it's a European-style hotel, second to none this side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And there was they said there'd be a first-class cafe in connection with it. And this, of course, is at 9th and Central, basically. And you could get a room for $1 a day. There was an elevator, which is kind of
important. That's pretty cool.
Electric lights and heat in every room.
Wow, that's big time for $1 a day.
So in 1892, he decides to sell the hotel. It sells for $200,000.
Holy crap. In 1892, mm-hmm. that's a lot of money. That's like $200 million in, you know, 2023 terms.
It was five stories tall. Think about it. That would have been a big deal back then.
No doubt.
And huge. So he ends up selling. There's like a legal battle, but it ends up in the hands of John Arbuckle in 1894, who's the coffee magnate. He's like a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And they did some repair to the hotel, and they actually raised it from 5 to 6 stories. And they owned it actually until then, you know, this, I should say that the Savoy ends up working itself in and reopens with 225 rooms in 1894. So they changed the name. Yeah. So they changed the name from Hotel Thorne to Hotel Savoy in 1894. And one company owned it until the 1940s. And then, of course, there were some financial problems, whatnot. And then, if you don't know, I mean, Savoy Hotel, the grill itself, like, which is the famous Savoy Grill,
right,
opened in 1903. And they were trying to be nostalgic, and they put, like, these murals of the Santa Fe Trail.
So nostalgic in 1903. Yes. What do you really have the draw on from 1903 if you're looking at nostalgia? Pictures of pre-Civil War, pictures of, you know, stuff that doesn't exist ever again, like stuff you'll never, ever see again, right?
Well, think about it. By 1903, you know, when they're doing this too, I mean, Kansas City, the gateway to this side of the West. And so I think that had a lot to do with it. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable because before it had to shut down, it was the oldest continuing operating hotel in the United States west of the Mississippi until it closed in 2006. The grill was, they had a big fire in 97. There was a major remodel in 2018. And the hotel was bought by 21C Museum Hotels. It's just like a Louisville-based company that has turned it into kind of a boutique hotel. They got a little criticism because they went a little modern in some areas. But in general, like, they have like an art museum type thing inside. But I mean, it still holds the nostalgia of, you know, the old days. And, you know, it's crazy that it started with a Civil War doctor with a fascination of the human body.
Dr. Thorne contributed a lot to Kansas City. He was not only just a Civil War doctor, but he was someone who really created one of the best and most popular restaurants of all time in Kansas City. Who knew a doctor from England would be responsible for some of the best steaks in KC?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.